Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Red Sox Review, and it starts right now. Here's your host, Joe Weil.
All right, the Red Sox have won again. Three consecutive W's, and Brian Bello is back. Joe Weil with you. Thanks for joining us on Red Sox Review. Another W for the Red Sox, who are now seven games above 500 at 46-39. They're now tied, as of us hitting the air live, for that third wild card spot in the American League. So much to get to tonight. We want to hear from you, obviously, and feel your excitement, because this Red Sox team is taking care of business against the Miami Marlins. And yes, this is one of the worst teams in baseball, but everyone counts the same as we approach the trading deadline. And you want this team to be hot coming into the weekend series against the Yankees, who, by the way, have lost again tonight. So you could be a hot team going into Yankee Stadium in the Bronx and being able to shut up the fans there if you continue to play good baseball, which this team is doing right now. Joe Weil with you. This is my man Zach Coe behind the glass. Again, we want to hear from you. The number to call in, 617-779-7937. Do you feel more confident now that Brian Bello back on track after a solid performance tonight, in which he allows just one run in 6 2/3 innings? We see the four-seam fastball from him today, and he could have gotten into a little trouble in the first inning and then also in the fourth inning, and he was able to work out of a couple of jams in this one and pitch like the ace he's supposed to be. And I think it is a little comical that we looked at today's start and had nerves about it. And I actually said this to Lou Maloney, and I still feel this way. I don't think I was out of character for saying this, but I asked Lou in our pregame coverage, to put into context how important tonight's start is for the audience. Because, yes, this Marlins team came into tonight with the worst on-base percentage in the sport, second to worst slugging percentage. They don't hit for power. They don't do anything well offensively, really. But I asked Lou to put it into context how important this start was for Brian Bello, because if he pitched poorly, then what do you do? But we don't have to answer that question tonight, thankfully, because he did pitch well. So again, we want to hear from you how you feel about Brian Bello. We also want to hear from you, now that this team is continuing to rack up some wins, who you'd want this team to go out and trade for. Because I think we're now starting to really truly approach the point, as watching this team on a day-to-day basis, where we can start to think about who we might want to come into the fold. So again, that's a part of the prompt as well. 617-779-7937. We also just want to hear, your thoughts in general, and let us know what you're doing for the 4th of July. Zach and I, we're going to be here. We will be with you for the 4th of July. We'd love to hear you chime in tomorrow as well. But tonight, a 7-2 Red Sox win over the Marlins. Alex Cora has got to be pumped about the way this team is playing, and also how Brian Bello pitched tonight, because they carved out more time for him to get this start. It was an 8-day layoff, really, from his last start to this one. And they did it to help him get his mental part of his game on track, get him settled in a little bit, maybe change some things, which they did with the four-seam fastball and the way that they utilized that tonight, and it ends up paying off, and that's the best part, because now you have Brian Bello feeling confident that he got himself back on track. We'll see where it jumps off from here. But now let's hear from Alex Cora what he had to say after this Red Sox 7-2 win over the Marlins.
You kind of said, we'll see, if the rest was beneficial for Bello. What do you think about the way he responded?
He did a good job, and he responded in the first inning the way we wanted him to. They came out swinging, they got their hits, but he stayed attacking, and his stuff was really good. He was throwing hard. The changeup was probably his best one of the season, and gave us a chance to win.
StatCast said that he reintroduced a four-seamer tonight. Was that part of the game plan to get him back on track?
We talk about it, and he actually brought it up early in the week. And, you know, Bell's in the group. They're going to help him out, you know, and if he feels comfortable with it, then we'll use it, you know. And I think he picked his spots. Location-wise was really good. And, you know, it's a pitch that we didn't use early on, and he felt like he needed it. You know, we'll pick our spots to use it.
Alex, did you see the biggest adjustment as the mentality, the attacking mentality?
I believe so. I think, you know, base it, you know, traffic right away, but he kept throwing strikes, and that's the most important thing. You know, his stuff is really good. It's really good. He throws hard. He has a changeup and slider. You can see, you know, the confidence on the mound, you know, no hesitation of him going in the seventh. You know, he's one of our best ones, you know, and we got to get him going, and today was a good one.
We talked about it a little bit, but where does that, like, boosted confidence come from?
You got to ask him that one, yeah. But I think there's a lot of people here that we trust him, that, you know, he's a total team effort here, you know, from teammates to coaches to Ray Fuentes, you know, our mental skills coach, you know. We're here to help, you know. Our job here is to maximize their talent and put them in positions to be successful. And then he went out there and performed.
You saw him kind of throw the ball to the crowd and then, like, very smiley when he got in. Did you get a sense of relief from him tonight, or?
I think he was locked in, you know. I don't know. That's for him, you know, to answer. But from our end, he did his job.
What about the way the offense kind of made Rodgers grind there in the third inning?
Yeah, we did a good job. You know, putting long on bats, ref with the two walks. I think Wonger walked in the second inning. You know, got lucky there, right? A lot of broken bat hits and all that. And then at the end, we put him away. But to get to the bullpen so early, that's what we try to do. And, you know, we grinded today and got the W.
You see Sadat kind of putting some stuff together here the last couple of days?
We're trying to preach, you know, just swinging strikes. And when he's patient, when he's not swinging 75% of the time, good things happen. And he's still a kid. You know, he's only 23. And you cannot take him for granted. You know, tomorrow is the same plan. You know, swinging strikes and keep going. And, you know, the last 2 days have been pretty good.
The defensive plays by O'Neal and Durant there in this big outfield.
Yeah, and ref too, down the line. You know, in the outfield, you know, we got movers. We've been talking about it from the get-go. We have some good ones, and it's a lot different from last year as far as, like, going to catch the ball. Obviously, in the infield, we need to keep pushing to be better. They've been solid, but we can be better. But overall, I think our defense has been better than last year, and there's a reason our pitching staff is good too.
All right, so that's Alex Cora talking after the Red Sox 7-2 win over the Miami Marlins. A lot of interesting stuff in there. The first of which, that Alex Cora confirms that Brian Baio asked to bring the four-seamer back into his fold, that he threw it 11 times out of 91 pitches. And it's interesting because that was a pitch that he hadn't used all season long coming into tonight. And it was a pitch that got hammered last year, and that's why Andrew Bailey and company went away from it, as batters had a expected slugging percentage of .559 off the pitch, and then their slugging percentage in general was .646 with a .310 average. But he ends up bringing it back into the fold, and as the outing progressed, he started to really use it, and it worked. And that's encouraging. This is your guy, right? This is the guy you've inked to a long-term contract. And as Alex Cora said, he's one of our best. We got to get him going, and today was a good one. And that's the most important thing. It was the topic of conversation coming into today's game. It was the most important thing. Yes, Jarren Duran made American League history with the 100 hits and the 10 homers and triples and 20 stolen bases, and it's not to knock that at all because he's been amazing this year. But the most important thing for today's game was getting Brian Baio on track, and that's why this game took on extra importance, and it was a game where it was so important to see him come through, even though it's against a team like the Marlins, who came into today 25 games below 500. as we have some texts coming in. We want to hear from you, by the way. 617-779-7937. You got to be a little bit fired up at this point because this team is playing good baseball. And, Zach, what I thought today was important is that they played perfect complementary baseball. Outside of leaving a ton of men on base, the offense, even though they did that, they still had seven runs. They put up seven runs on the board, and you heard Alex Cora right at the end talk about Seydon Rafaela.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. They left, I think, Joe and Lou harped on it a couple times. I think it was 13 men on base, so it took a little bit for the offense to get going. Then in the ninth, they kind of break things open. You get to let Kenley sit for the night and bring in Weissert to close the door. It was a really encouraging game, especially from Bayo. The first inning, he comes out, immediately puts a couple guys on, and you really felt like that inning had the potential to spiral on him because that's what he had been doing in his last couple outings, and he really bared down and got out of the inning with just one run scored, which was really encouraging to see to start out the night.
Yeah, I got a little nervous in the first inning because he allows a run, and then he actually balked to put runners on second and third, and you think if he doesn't get Xavier Edwards to fly out to center field, where this game could have gone. Like, say he hits a two-run single, where are you at this point? Because you're down 3-0, and this was the start to get you back on track. It was a weird juxtaposition of, yes, this team is not very good, the one that the Red Sox are playing, and on top of that, it's still the middle of July. Yes, every game is more important as you get toward the trade deadline. By the way, we're going to get to the phones in 1 minute here, but it was a big game for this guy to get himself on track and going again, because this team's going nowhere without Brian Bayo. That's just the reality because of where their starting pitching staff is. Now, hopefully they add at the trade deadline if they decide they're going to add, because they need starting pitching, because it's a group that's thin in the sense of experience in the big leagues and innings pitched, but you need this guy to come through. And I liked the pitch repertoire. I liked the way he attacked batters. He had a little bit of a strut to him as well. He struck out a guy in the second inning. It was Nick Fortes to end the bottom of the second inning. He had a little bit of a Bayo strut off. I like that. I like the swagger. We got to bring that back a little bit. You need that guy, not the frustrated one who's throwing his glove down and he gets all upset. So it was cool to see Brian Bayo come back on track. Zach, what were you feeling coming into this start?
Yeah, me and Cooper talked about it a little bit during the last segment that last night, that the story of the game, no matter the result, was going to be how Bayo performed and how he bounced back after they push him back. And we were saying that it could potentially change the way that Breslow views the entire trade deadline. I know you said that they need to add a starter, but if Bayo didn't pitch well and they maybe considered sending him to AAA, you go from needing one starter to potentially needing two. So for him to come out and bounce back the way he did, albeit against a bad offense, was really encouraging to me.
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge. Again, 617-779-7937 is the number to call in. We want to hear from you after this one. 617-779-7937 to join the conversation. But let's go to the phones. Let's go to Carl in Westfield. He wants to talk about the offense. What's going on, Carl?
Well, this is really wild. And, hey, Zach is a little smart, and it's really, when I call in, it's you two. I run it by him, and we chat, and when you said something that got me going, which is we're 28-11 on teams 500 or under, and here you are bragging about how Beowulf is out there pounding down the poor wounded and weak animals, which it's what we're supposed to do, and this is the funniest part. I don't see, so I have to hear, and I'm listening to these names, and it sounds like we're DDT and the other team, which is Downtown Devers, Doc Ock Durant running around picking balls off the wall and out of the field. I didn't know about Seydon, Rafael, and of course Tyler, and then Wong. We have such a potential to be a huge batting advance. I guarantee you. And imagine Bayo Wolf is Bayo Cook, 99 miles an hour.
That's, yeah.
I remember the first time I went to the field, Joe, if you've never been to a game, when you hear a zip, I was a kid, and I hear this noise and a thud. I'm like, what the hang is that? The noise it makes going through the air and when it hits the glove is mind-boggling. Like, put your hand out the window at 100 miles an hour and add movement. You know, good luck. Hey, Joe, the Bluetooth just shut off. You still there?
We still got you, Carl.
Okay, and then this is the other part. In terms of the ability to pound on other teams and what New York's going through, we're scaring the potential. And when you're thinking about trade, someone has to realize the value of another ace pitcher with our staff that already has some ace potential and Whitlock and them throwing record years. We have such a huge amount of offense. If there's a team that can get over the edge that needs a bat, and I would never give up any of them. I love them all now, but to somewhere, if we picked up an ace, you're talking a major advancement towards the end of the year. And if the other teams don't continue to stay healthy, this is a whole different ballgame if this continues the way we're looking.
Yeah, I agree with you, Carl, and appreciate the call as always. And we love being the sounds for you to help bring life to the game. And obviously, that's what Joe and Lou did tonight. Great call from those two. But a couple of things off that call. I mean, he hits on the offense, which is now becoming a little bit of an underrated part of this team because so much of the conversation, both good and recently, I don't want to say bad, but more mediocre the way that the rotation's pitched recently, and especially Bayo, that the offense has been a little bit of an unsung part of this team. You realize that they're top 10 in the sport in average on base and slugging percentage, and then home runs are just outside of the top 10. Connor Wong's got a 17-game hitting streak. He's your catcher. Catchers don't have 17-game hitting streaks very often. You have Devers. He's having a career year because he's taking pitches and he's being more selective at the plate. He's been awesome. He hit another triple today. Rafael Devers has 4 triples this year. 4! That's more than you thought he'd have this year. More than I thought. So he's been awesome. Ref Snyder is still a left-handed masher. Jaron Duran, we've talked about the offense and what he's done this year. Yoshida's starting to swing it a little bit better. I mean, the exit velos weren't great, except for the ground ball RBI in the seventh inning. He hit the crap out of that ball, which I thought was, off the bat, I'm like, okay, that's 2 runs. And then instead it ends up being a nice play by the third baseman, Emmanuel Rivera. But Zaydon Rafaela, month by month, is getting better too. Like, it's a good offense, which would be crazy to say back in mid-May. Or late May. And to Carl's point, if you add a good pitcher to this mix to fortify the rotation a little bit, which you never know, there could be another injury. And Zach, here's the part of which I'm the most concerned about this rotation is that I think back to last year. And I do think that this team is different than last year. It's more athletic, frankly, more fun to watch. And Duran's a different player this year compared to last year. I mean, I think, really, you go up and down the lineup, maybe outside of Yoshida and what he did in the first half. Everybody's better than last year. But the part in which I think could end up being a similar trend to last year is if they don't add a starting pitcher, that things may, you know, the deck of cards may come down because of the innings that all these guys have thrown in the past and the fact that they could tire down the stretch.
Yeah, that's something that we touched on last night, too. Cutter Crawford is 30 innings away from his career high. And even in the minors, I think we said the most that he pitched in a year was 140 innings. Tanner Houck has already passed his career high in innings. So there is a real risk of these guys burning down because we haven't seen them be fully stretched out starters over a full 162 yet in their career. So I really think the name I've been on recently for the deadline is Nathan Eovaldi, bringing him back if the Rangers decide to sell. Just a guy that you know can go out there and eat innings for you and be like helping hands to some of these younger players as they continue to make their way through their first big league season as a starter.
That would be fun to bring him back. And it'd almost be like Al Horford coming back. Like, you know, it takes a little detour somewhere else and then comes back. Although I'm sure Nathan Eovaldi has liked Texas more than Al Horford. Or he has liked Texas as much as Al Horford hated Philadelphia because he hates Philly. Again, 6-1.
They hate him.
Yeah, right. They don't like him back. Again, 617-779-7937. By the way, was that Paul from Westfield? Because we had a text come in say that was Paul. Did he change his name to Carl?
He calls in every night. Sometimes he says Paul. Sometimes he says Carl. So I have no idea.
Paul, Carl, we appreciate you chiming in regardless.
Let's go. Did call me a little smart, though. So it's only the Little Dumb is where his name gets confused.
A couple more texts rolling in, too. Thank you, guys. Good energy. I'm excited about these players. Appreciate you there. And somebody texted in, holding on to my Red Sox to win 79.5 plus games ticket, and my Red Sox to make the playoffs at plus 660 ticket. The first one especially is looking good. Second one, we'll see. I think the trade deadline is going to do a lot of it. And Alex Cora has talked about the importance of continuing to play through the deadline, regardless of what happens. Because as he has on the record stated, he felt like he could have done a better job leading the group. Now, I think that's fair. I also think, again, he in part was holding things up last year, and then everything just fell apart because of the pitching. Like, we'll always remember that Kyle Bearclaw game. We'll remember a lot of those bullpen games that ended up kind of totaling up in the end and didn't work out. But this team's fun. We've said that a lot, and they're playing consistent baseball, too. That's one of the key things. It's a stretch now in which they're 13-5, and over their last 18 games, they're winning on the road a ton. They're beating the bad teams, and that was the last point from Paul or Carl from Westfield I just wanted to follow up on. I know people can look at that stat that I rattled off, that they're 28-11 against teams that are now 500 or worse, but you need to beat the bad teams. You don't want to let those games fall by the wayside. And listen, they're getting the job done. They're playing who's ahead of them. Now, you hope they could play better against better teams, and hopefully that's the case, you know, this weekend against the Yankees. We'll have to wait and see, but they're getting the job done. Again, 617-779-7937. When we come back, we're going to get to your calls. We'll continue to get through them, and we will also break down Bayo's performance even more. Let's go to Zach now with what's trending here on WEI.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Red Sox beat the Marlins tonight by a final score of 7-2. Big bounce back start for Brian Bayo. He went 6 2/3, allowing one run on 7 hits while striking out 7. Masataka Yoshida continued to swing a good bat, going 2-for-4 with 2 RBIs. The Sox will look to complete the sweep of the Marlins tomorrow afternoon when Nick Pivetta takes the mound opposite Kyle Tyler for the Marlins. Our coverage of that series finale kicks off with Cooper Boardman on the MassMutual pregame show at 12:10. Then Joe Castiglione and Lou Maloney will have the call of the game at 1:10 on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Elsewhere in Major League Baseball, the Rays have traded starter Aaron Civale to the Milwaukee Brewers for a prospect, and the MLB All-Star Game starters were announced. The Red Sox do not have a starter this year. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Red Sox for you coming up after this.
Why does it feel like nobody really gives us the inside scoop? Join us on The Powers That Be, the podcast where insiders from Puck break down who has influence, how they use it, and what it actually means for you. New episodes every weekday. Listen to The Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
And a chopper hit weakly up the first base line. The pitcher bobbles it, and the go-ahead run scores. Everybody's safe. First baseman stayed back. Berger to cover the bag. And the left-hand pitcher tried to barehand it, going toward the foul line on the carpet, and he bobbled it.
Well, when you're going good, he takes a little breaking ball and chops this right into the ground, but it was perfect direction. You know, Berger doesn't go after this ball, and he probably should have and let Rogers continue to first base. And they probably would have got Yoshida, not a burner, down the line, but he leaves Rogers to get to it. Big guy coming off the mound, falling off to the third base line, and wasn't able to barehand it.
Wasn't hit all that hard, but it was the go-ahead knock in today's game. Masataka Yoshida with 2 more hits. He goes 2-for-4, so over his current 3-game hitting streak, he is now 7-for-13. And overall, swinging it a little bit better. Sox could really use that from the designated hitter spot. Him, you know, hitting it pretty consistently, registering some knocks, and he did tonight. And it's part of a 7-2 Red Sox win over the Miami Marlins. And that was the highlight from tonight's Nissan Red Sox postgame show. You deserve a card that thrills you, and Nissan's got an exciting line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself. Shop your Nissan store and NissanUSA.com today. So the Red Sox, they've won three in a row. We're putting goosebumps on your goosebumps. All is well here in Boston. And a happy July 4th to you upcoming. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier on Red Sox Review, Joe Weil with you, Zach Coe behind the glass. This dynamic duo is going to have you for Sox postgame tomorrow. So while you're you know, cooking out on the barbecue and you're wearing your red, white, and blue and enjoying the day, hopefully out on the patio and just soaking all in the Independence Day here in America, you're tuning in to us. We'll have your Red Sox coverage, and we'll take you up to 6:30 tomorrow night. But for tonight, a lot going the Red Sox way. That little dribbler was part of it. The Marlins, they kicked it around a couple different times and were a little bit slapstick on the way they played defensively. There was one ball that the Sox hit. It was a triple by Saint-On Rafaela out to center field where Jazz Chisholm, he slipped out there and then he tried to throw it to the left fielder De La Cruz and it went over his head. And that was one of a couple different plays. This Marlins team is not good. And we're not telling you on this show that just because they won tonight in this specific game that they're now a bona fide contender. What we're trying to tell you is that, one, this team is entertaining, but two, they are slowly but surely continuing to build a case of which that they should be a team that adds at the trade deadline. And that's what we want to hear from you. That's going to be a big theme here for the month of July, but we want to know who you think this team should add. Do you think this team is worthy of adding, even if it means dealing a top prospect? Maybe not the big three, Marcelo Meyer, Roman Anthony, Kyle Teal, but some of those prospects right under that, maybe a Christian Campbell, maybe a Blaze Jordan, maybe a Nick York, who's killing it out in AAA. So we want to hear from you, 617-779-7937. You can also text us at 37937 as well. Zach, did you know, according to one texter, that Red Sox winning the World Series, if you put $100 on it, you win $6,000.
Sounds like they're just giving you money.
Red Sox to win the division, plus $7,500.
Again, easy money.
According to this texter. Wild card is in play. The 79.5 wins, you know, that, again, we don't want to get so far ahead of ourselves that we forget the past. Because I know there were some people sweating it out last year that had it. I think at one point it was at 77.5 wins, and then they won 78. And you were telling me a story, Zach, about what you thought you had it. You're at 78.5. Is that
right? Either at 78.5 or 79.5. And going into the month of September, they needed to win like 9 or 10 games or whatever it was, and they completely fell apart there at the end and ended up missing.
I'm sorry for your wallet.
I did not take that again this year. I learned my lesson.
But this team is different, and we keep hitting on it. But 12 hits tonight, 7 runs, up and down the order. You know, guys, even though they left 12 men on base in this one, they end up getting the job done, and the offense has been consistent. And the numbers, really since the beginning of June, have shown that this is a top 10 offense pretty convincingly, which I think is, you know, is remarkable in the way that they've turned things around, you know, as of late, because they came into tonight, since the month of June, fourth in slugging, fourth in OPS. They've been hitting it hard a ton in that span as well, second in on-base percentage in this span as well. And then again, they have 12 hits and 7 runs. But now it becomes, okay, does the front office, do they look at what's happening? Do they think it's enough to add? Which, again, Alex Cora has pretty much said it without now truly saying it, because he clarified the record today in an article to Chris, conversation with Chris Cotillo of Mass Live, where he talked about the getting greedy comment, which he talked about with the way that they're playing, and he said it was more a message to the players rather than the front office. I think the one interesting thing, Zach, about that whole comment that Alex Cora originally made, the get greedy, was a part of a bigger thing about he mentioned this one team in the division that hadn't been playing very well. and it was the Yankees, who have now lost 13 of 18 after they lost today. They're still 6.5 games back of them, but there's still so much time in the schedule. And you look at like the Yankees right now, it's Judge, it's Soto, and then it's absolutely nothing around them. So, yes, they have this big lead. They built this big lead because the Yankees played so well at the beginning of the year. But things have changed. This is baseball, and people blow leads. Like, Red Sox fans from 78 remember that, right? And, like, there's so many examples of that in baseball history where a big lead was built, and then it all fell apart for all sorts of reasons. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's becoming more and more realistic by the day, and that's what's making this season so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I said this at the beginning of the year. I really didn't understand why people thought the Yankees were going to be so good, because obviously they got off to that hot start. But like you said, they have Judge and Soto in their lineup, and then really nothing else of note. Like, they have the ghost of Giancarlo Stanton. They're kind of hoping for Anthony Volpe to turn it on, and he has in spurts. But other than that, he's been pretty underwhelming. So they have a real opportunity. What if they win? They win all three this weekend. They're 3.5 back of the Yankees now. So they have a real opportunity to kind of creep up on this division lead and really solidify themselves as buyers heading into the deadline.
All right, so we have a text rolling in about what the Sox should do at the trade deadline. Somebody saying, go get Marlins' own Tanner Scott and ditch Kenley.
What are you giving up for Tanner Scott, and what are you getting back for Kenley? Because I feel like I would rather have Kenley as a closer if this is a team that's going to make a playoff push.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm with you, right? I appreciate the chiming in there. Again, if you want to grab a line, 617-779-7937. Again, 617-779-7937. It does feel like now, again, if you are in a buyer's spot, and especially if you add somebody, that's going to fire up Kenley Jansen. It's going to fire up Chris Martin. And I do think if you decide, okay, we're going to actually contend here, you can't do what you did last year and not add anybody and then keep those guys. And it's a different story, obviously, because both those guys are now expiring contracts. But that makes it even more the case they need to pick a lane and decide what they want to do. Because Kenley can get you a lot. And maybe not a lot like Chris Sale could get you a lot back when the Sox traded for him and they had to give up all those prospects, which obviously worked out in the end for the Red Sox. But he gets just something because he's back in peak form. Now, another text rule. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, Cole Reagans last year got traded for Aroldis Chapman, and now he's one of the best pitchers in the American League this year. Obviously, he was a project when he went from Texas to Kansas City, but this is a guy who had first-round pedigree, so that could be the type of deal that you could be looking for Kenley if you do decide to sell.
Now, somebody chiming in here, do you honestly believe that John Henry is going to add? And if he doesn't, are we actually good enough to contend after the deadline? And that's a fair question. I think both of them are fair questions. And I, especially the second part of that question, this is a team that needs more. And I don't think it's fair to do what you did last year and say, okay, you know, well, we're going to get reinforcements. So that's enough, right? Because they did that with Trevor Story, and then he couldn't hit. And it was in part because they rushed him back. They needed him, you know, up at the big league level, and he didn't have his timing down. And they can't just say that with Tristan Casas and a Liam Hendricks coming back, right? You need more than that. And I actually, and specifically, Zach, I think you need more than that because none of them are the specific thing that we keep talking about, and that's starting pitching. Right.
Yeah. And I hate the argument of saying like, oh, well, we're going to get player X back right around the deadline. So that's like at like we did this with Chris Sale for years of, oh, we're going to get Chris Sale back right around the deadline. That's like adding an elite starter at the deadline. No, it's not, because he was already on your team. But I do think it kind of applies with Casas because, like we've been talking about, the offense has been so good. They're a top 10 offense in baseball without him. But that argument only works if you then go and add a starting pitcher. So then you can say we're getting Tristan Casas back and adding to a top 10 offense in baseball, and we're going out and we're solidifying our rotation.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Thankfully, after today, a part of that starting rotation feels a little bit better. That's because Brian Baio was good. 6 2/3 innings, one run allowed, and he spoke after the win tonight, a 7-2 win over the Marlins. Here's what he had to say.
No, it feels good. It feels good to be able to have a successful start, and also all the work that we did in between starts with Bailey paid off, so it was good.
Looking back on it. How important do you think it was that you limited the damage in the first inning?
¿Qué tan importante fue que limitaste el daño en ese primer inning?
No, fue muy bueno, ya que me mantuve atacando sin importar lo que estuviera pasando y pude sacar los outs. Había gente primera y segunda sin outs, so muy importante.
No, it was very good. It was very good for me. Always like kept attacking the batters. I knew I had runners in first and second, but I was able to get out of that inning.
You said, you know, you were attacking the batters. Do you think that was the biggest adjustment today that you went after the hitters?
Que dijiste que estabas atacando a los bateadores, que si eso es uno de los ajustes más grandes que hiciste desde la última salida al día de hoy.
Sí, claro que ataca a los bateadores, que eso es lo que he estado fallando desde el principio de la temporada y claro que sí.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was the biggest adjustment, attacking the batters. I think that's one of the things that I haven't done it since the beginning of the year until today.
What kind of
motivation for getting your four seamer back in the mix?
¿Qué cuál fue tu motivación para agregar la cuatro costuras otra vez a tu mezcla de lanzamiento?
Estuvimos hablando Bailey y yo, estuvimos hablando también con AC y creo que cuando tuvimos esa conversación de meter full sim, pues fue buena idea y funcionó bastante bien.
Yeah, no, it was a conversation, a discussion between Bailey and Alex and me. We decided that it was a good moment to bring the four-seamer back.
And it paid off for Brian Bayo bringing that four-seamer back. Again, it was part of the mix tonight, which was, you know, one of the interesting things about tonight's game and that he delivered. And if you missed it before, Bayo pitches 6 2/3 innings and allows just one run after having an ERA over 9 over his last four starts. The changeup was really good today as well. That pitch was placed perfectly in a lot of counts, especially finishing off batters at times tonight, because what's been an issue for him is he's elevated that pitch. I always think back to that Gavin Sheets grand slam against the White Sox, where it was a changeup. It was like right over the heart of the plate. It was that was the one, Zach, he threw the glove down afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's had too many moments like that. I mean, there have been 5 home runs against that changeup already this year. But I thought tonight specifically, that pitch he put in so many good spots, either at the bottom of the zone or below the bottom of the zone when he was up in the count and 2 strikes. So that plays a huge part of it. And then you couple it with the four-seam fastball, and he almost hit 100 miles an hour. And as Rob Bradford pointed out after I tweeted about Lou mentioning the four-seam fastballs and then sent out a picture of it, you know, with Baseball Savant basically showing that he's throwing the four-seam fastball, and Rob has mentioned that, you know, Brian Bayo's got this tattoo to represent his quest for triple digits, and it's at 100 on, you know, the top of his arm and his right arm. He was so close. He was at 99. I mean, he had a ton of juice coming into this one. And that's what happens when you get 7 days of rest between starts. And he came out. He was giving up hits, though, in the beginning, because the Marlins, they're so big on swinging at first pitches. They swing at more first pitches than any team in Major League Baseball. And it's crazy, this game sometimes, where, you know, you think about it going one way, it looked like it was going one way, and then he settled down. And then the fourth inning, same thing. Maybe it's starting to unravel for him. First and second, nobody out, gets out of that. And he ends up putting up the outing that he has, and now the conversation, the narrative changes, and now we feel differently. Even if it's against a bad team, he still did it, and now you have the proof in the pudding there.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, like, obviously the Marlins are one of the worst offenses in the league, up there with the White Sox. But the White Sox are a team that gave Bayo fits a couple weeks ago. So it was really important for him to come out and prove, like, I can shut down this team, even if they are bad, because we literally just saw him get rocked by a bad team.
Right. It's happened. We've seen it time and time again. I mean, even the Blue Jays aren't really that good of a team. I know that unlike the Marlins, they have some dangerous bats like Vladdy and, you know, Justin Turner and all that stuff. Whereas this Marlins team, you go up and down. I mean, I'm going to be honest. I follow baseball on you know, a day-to-day basis. I love this sport. I live and breathe it. I knew a couple of these names on the Marlins. I knew Jake Berger in large part because I used to broadcast games in the White Sox minor league system. Jazz Chisholm, that's a name everybody knows. Brian De La Cruz, I knew. Josh Bell, I knew. But, I mean, there were a couple in there I'd never heard of. Vidal Brujan, I'd heard of. Edwards Rivera. So there were just a couple that I... This Marlins team has a ton of guys, especially on the pitching side, too, that you probably have never heard of. And that's okay. That's okay. We're here to tell you that's okay. But no, the Red Sox on this team. And again, they win 7-2 tonight. Before we go tonight, by the way, we can let you know about the All-Star game and who ended up getting announced for both teams. But we did want to play Joe and Lou's conversation with Connor Wong after the game, because Connor Wong, he catches all nine. He extends his hitting streak to 17 games, which puts him, I mean, he's already been in elite company this year in a couple different ways, but how about this? It's the longest active streak right now, the 17-game hitting streak that Connor Wong's on, and it's tied for the third longest ever by a Red Sox catcher. So you have Victor Martinez, who had a 25-game hitting streak in 2009, Carlton Fisk in 1976, 18-game hitting streak, and he was such a legend that he had a 17-game hitting streak from 1975 to 1976. Connor Wong is now tied with Carlton Fisk in terms of hitting streak, 17 games. And here's him with Lou and Joe after the game.
Back here at Lone Depot Park, the Red Sox with a 7-2 win. With us is Connor Wong, who extended his hit streak to 17 games right off the bat with a hit in the seventh in the second inning. Kind of before we get to that, how about Brian Bayo? What a bounce back start, huh?
Yeah, he was great tonight. You know, really good, really good for him and really good for us.
Bill Connor talking about that hitting streak. I don't listen. If I had a 17 game hitting streak, it would have lasted 5 months. But for you, is it nice? Do you think about it? Is that something the first day at bat? It's nice to get over with.
I try not to think about it, but you know how it goes. Yeah, it's nice to get it out of the way early, and then you know be able to play after that.
What was the difference with Bayo tonight? I only walked one. Was it command or was it the better changeup?
I think everything was really good tonight. He had command of the two, the four. The changeup was really good and mixed in the slider really well.
So I have to ask you, because I was looking at StatCast throughout the game, and they did say he threw some four-seamers tonight. Mm-hmm. Is that something he broke out here tonight?
Yeah, it's something he used tonight.
So that was part of the plan, maybe during that brief rest period, to go back to that?
Yeah, I mean, he had it in his arsenal, and, you know, it was a pitch he'd been working on in the bullpens, and tonight was the night we brought it out.
You know, that was interesting. Corey talking about how it was a sneaky spot for you guys. You know, day off in Miami, everybody enjoys the beach, but you guys come out the next two nights really focused, played two really good baseball games. What's it say about your team?
Yeah, I mean, we're just grinding it out, you know, good team. We just play hard and see what happens.
Very good, Connor. Well, go for a sweep tomorrow. Not easy to do against any big league club, but... things are lining up pretty well, huh?
Yeah, I mean, we'll play a good game tomorrow and see what happens.
Okay, thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the hit streak and the win.
Thank you, guys.
All right, so that's Connor Wong after the Red Sox 7-2 win against the Miami Marlins. Connor Wong, he's all about business, which we like, because he's been awesome. I hope he's playing in the All-Star game coming up, but he did mention, as we've been talking about, that Bayo whipped out the four-seam fastball tonight against the Marlins. That's a key development moving forward for a pitcher that is oh so important to the Red Sox future. And we knew the questions coming into tonight, because if he wasn't figured out, then where does the season go? And again, it's just one start, so we'll still see. But this was a positive, positive, positive moment that hopefully he can build on and continue to sustain moving forward. So that's the key. His next start's going to be against the A's too. So he's going to have another outing against a team that doesn't swing the bat all that well. So he can build on this with another team that he can kind of beat up on and try some things out. But all in all, a great outing for Brian Bayo, the longest of the season, and the Sox win their third straight game as they take it 7-2 against the Marlins. Zach and I to wrap things up here on Red Sox Review right after this on WEI.
Everything Boston Red Sox. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
In this case, I think there's a drive down the right field line. This may do it off the bat of Fortes. Over to make the catch is O'Neill in shallow right. And the Red Sox have won the first two games of the series. They have won their 13th series of the year as they beat the Miami Marlins 7-2.
All right, that's the final call from Joe Castiglione from Lone Depot Park. The Sox win another one. So since May 19th, the Red Sox are now 24-15. And that if you shortened it to their last 18 games, they're 13-5. Most important thing, 7 games above .500, and they're still very much in contention for a wild card spot. Now, Kansas City, they were playing the Tampa Bay Rays, and they're three outs away from picking up a victory. So if that's the case, Sox will still be a half game out of the third wild card spot. But you need to stay in it by winning. Sox take care of business against the Marlins. Brian Baio with a bounce back performance tonight. That's one of the most notable things to take away from tonight, with just one run in 6 2/3 innings and the offense putting together a 7-run performance. Joe Weil with you here on Red Sox Review. Zach Coe behind the glass as we wrap things up. And one to mention the All-Star starting lineups for both teams. In case you did not see them, no Red Sox in the American League, as expected. A little disappointing that Jarren Duran, we couldn't find a way to get him in from an All-Star voting standpoint. But you look at the three outfielders that are there, not to say that they... Well, Judge, you'd say, deserves it more than Duran, just because Judge is having an incredible year. But, you know, depending on what type of, you know, wins above replacement metric you want to look at, maybe you'd say Duran would deserve it more than Juan Soto or Stephen Kwan, but those two guys are still really good, right? They're those three outfielders, honestly, if you put together an MVP vote, I think all those guys are for sure top 10. And then you can even make an argument that they're top 5, right? Soto, Judge, and I know Stephen Kwan is a guy that is on a different plane as those other ones in terms of the love he gets. But listen, the Guardians have been one of the best teams in baseball, and he's been one of the biggest reasons why. And he's starting to hit for power, too. But anyway, no Red Sox among the All-Stars as of yet. Here's the whole American League All-Star roster among the starters. You have Adley Rutschman as the catcher, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first, Jose Altuve at second, Jose Ramirez at third, Gunnar Henderson at short, and then it's Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and Stephen Kwan out in the outfield, and then Yordan Alvarez is your designated hitter. I mean, it's a star-studded lineup, and I guess the question is, at first base, does Vladimir Guerrero Jr. probably truly deserve the nod? He's had a good year. It's not that 2021 version of Vladdy, but I don't know. Zach, I can't hate on that all-star lineup. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really have any serious qualms with it. I think in my heart of hearts, I think that Jarren Duran should be starting over Stephen Kwan. And Vladdy's been really good as of late, so even if he didn't start out super hot, he's kind of made up for it in the last month or so. So, yeah, I don't really have any issues with it.
And I think you could make an argument for Devers over Jose Ramirez at third base, too.
Yeah, I mean...
But I think Jose Ramirez has had a better season. It's just hard because Devers has had, like, a career year. That's why he should be... You know, I think when we were putting these together about, you know, thinking about who the reserves, right? If the Sox didn't vote anybody in, which we kind of knew wasn't going to happen. Like, who are the reserves that the Sox will have in the game? And we had been a long time talking about Duran and Tanner Houck as one of the pitchers, and I felt like Devers didn't get in that conversation unless it was like name brand recognition. I think he deserves it now. Like it's one of the reserves, especially the third base reserve.
Yeah, I mean, I know Jordan Westberg was second in the All-Star voting. I think that was more because the Orioles have a good team for the first time in God knows how long, so their fans are really like ready to go out there and vote for them. But I think if it comes down to Jordan Westberg or Rafael Devers to get on the reserves, it should be Devers in a landslide.
Yeah, and maybe Paredes, too. Like, that's another guy that could kind of get in there as well. But, yeah, I mean, here I am hyping the guy that's here. But, I mean, the way he's performed recently... I think he's deserved of consideration. To
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Paredes, too, because every team has to have a representative, so it might be that Devers gets left off just because Paredes needs to be the Rays' sole representative.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point. And it's funny with the Sox, because I think Duran, Houck, Devers, Wong, and then Jansen. Like, those are the five contenders to make the team. I think Duran's pretty much in there at this point. I think Houck, even though his last start wasn't very good, like I think he's in there as well.
Yeah, I think he's solidified himself.
I think those two, like I feel the most confident about those two. But Kenley's kind of, you know, the way he's pitched recently, right? And then Devers, again, he's name brand recognition to me. Like, he stands out more than anybody.
Yeah, I think Kenley is another one where it's just name recognition. He's a Hall of Fame closer, so they're probably going to throw him in.
Yeah. That we'll have to wait and see. And then, if you're interested, the National League, William Contreras, Bryce Harper, Marte at second, Alec Bohm at third, Trey Turner, Christian Yelich, Jerickson Profar, Fernando Tatis Jr., Shohei Ohtani. I like the American League better.
Yeah, I kind of got away from betting on the All-Star game just because it's meaningless, and it's pretty degenerate to be betting on a meaningless All-Star game, but I think if I were going to wager, it'd be on the American League.
Yeah, it's crazy that there was a time in which the All-Star game meant the league had home field advantage, and there was no season that was crazier than 2014. When this all happened, because do you remember 2014 was Derek Jeter's last All-Star game, and Adam Wainwright grooved a fastball in there, and Jeter hits a double, and he literally admits it after the game. Like, I did it. You know, it's like, listen, I'm a big fan. You know, like, I respect him. Grooves in a fastball. And then the National League loses. Now, the irony is the Giants ended up winning in Game 7 anyway. That was the famous Madison Bumgarner game. But it's just funny that that's what determined who had home field advantage.
It would have been funny if the Giants had lost that Game 7, and then the next year at the All-Star game, they're all ready to kill Adam Wainwright for costing them home field advantage there.
Yeah. I mean, there were some... Now, I do remember, like, growing up, I remember some of the All-Star games being pretty interesting. Like, Hank Blaylock, that's a name people my age, 30 years old, remember. He hit a go-ahead home run against Eric Gagne, of all people, in 2003. I remember Michael Young had a big hit. I think that was 2005 or 2006 that he hit, like, a go-ahead two-run triple against Trevor Hoffman. Like, there had been some fun moments. And then the one at Yankee Stadium was pretty fun. Went 15 innings. J.D. Drew, I'm pretty sure J.D. Drew was the All-Star Game MVP, because I know he took Edison Volquez deep in that game. Yeah, J.D. Drew. Let me make sure I got that right. J.D. Drew, let's see, 2008 All-Star Game MVP. It was J.D. Drew. There you go.
Edison Volquez is a great pull there. I haven't thought about him in ages.
Zach, is the more you get to work with me, the more useless baseball information that I have lodged in my memory from my childhood, it's there. But anyway, it'll be fun to watch that All-Star game, and I am excited to see which Red Sox end up getting announced. My only concern is being disappointed that it's going to be one or two, because I think they probably deserve three based on all we're talking about at this point. And I know you're sitting, maybe you're listening, you're on the road, and you say, okay, well, but this team's not even in the playoff picture yet. But I do think they have enough candidates, again, the ones we talked about, with Duran, Wong, Houck, Devers, Jansen, that I hope they at least get three. To me, that feels like the right amount, but we'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, Sox keep winning. Three straight W's, and they go for the sweep tomorrow on July 4th. We hope you have an awesome Independence Day. We're going to have Red Sox coverage for you all day long, starting at 12:10 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show, then first pitch at 1:10, and then Zach Coe and I have you for the afternoon on July 4th. Want to thank Zach. Great work behind the glass here at WEI. I'm Joe Weil. Final one, final time. Red Sox 7, Marlins 2. Brian Baio back on track. Thanks for listening to Red Sox Review here on WEI.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything Boston Red Sox. This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
In this case, I think there's a drive down the right field line. This may do it off the bat of Fortes. Over to make the catch is O'Neill in shallow right. And the Red Sox have won the first two games of the series. They have won their 13th series of the year as they beat the Miami Marlins 7-2.
All right, that's the final call from Joe Castiglione from Lone Depot Park. The Sox win another one. So since May 19th, the Red Sox are now 24-15. And that if you shortened it to their last 18 games are 13-5. Most important thing, 7 games above 500, and they're still very much in contention for a wild card spot. Now, Kansas City, they were playing the Tampa Bay Rays, and they're three outs away from picking up a victory. So if that's the case, Sox will still be a half game out of the third wild card spot. But you need to stay in it by winning. Sox take care of business against the Marlins. Brian Baio with a bounce back performance tonight. That's one of the most notable things to take away from tonight, with just one run in 6 2/3 innings and the offense putting together a 7-run performance. Joe Weil with you here on Red Sox Review. Zach Coe behind the glass as we wrap things up. And one to mention the All-Star starting lineups for both teams. In case you did not see them, no Red Sox in the American League, as expected. A little disappointing that Jarren Duran, we couldn't find a way to get him in from an All-Star voting standpoint. But you look at the three outfielders that are there, not to say that they... Well, Judge, you'd say, deserves it more than Duran, just because Judge is having an incredible year. But, you know, depending on what type of, you know, wins above replacement metric you want to look at, maybe you'd say Duran would deserve it more than Juan Soto or Stephen Kwan, but those two guys are still really good, right? Those three outfielders, honestly, if you put together an MVP vote, I think all those guys are for sure top 10. And then you can even make an argument that they're top 5, right? Soto, Judge, and I know Stephen Kwan is a guy that is on a different plane as those other ones in terms of the love he gets. But listen, the Guardians have been one of the best teams in baseball, and he's been one of the biggest reasons why. And he's starting to hit for power, too. But anyway, no Red Sox among the All-Stars as of yet. Here's the whole American League All-Star roster among the starters. You have Adley Rutschman as the catcher, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at first, Jose Altuve at second, Jose Ramirez at third, Gunnar Henderson at short, and then it's Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, and Stephen Kwan out in the outfield, and then Yordan Alvarez is your designated hitter. I mean, it's a star-studded lineup, and I guess the question is, at first base, does Vladimir Guerrero Jr. probably truly deserve the nod? He's had a good year. It's not that 2021 version of Vladdy, but I don't know. Zach, I can't hate on that all-star lineup. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really have any serious qualms with it. I think in my heart of hearts, I think that Jarren Duran should be starting over Stephen Kwan. And Vladdy's been really good as of late, so even if he didn't start out super hot, he's kind of made up for it in the last month or so. So, yeah, I don't really have any issues with it.
And I think you could make an argument for Devers over Jose Ramirez at third base, too.
Yeah, I mean...
But I think Jose Ramirez has had a better season. It's just hard because Devers has had like a career year. That's why he should be, you know, I think when we were putting these together about, you know, thinking about who the reserves, right? If the Sox didn't vote anybody in, which we kind of knew wasn't going to happen, like who are the reserves that the Sox will have in the game? And we had been a long time talking about Duran and Tanner Houck as one of the pitchers. And I felt like Devers didn't get in that conversation unless it was like name brand recognition. I think he deserves it now. Like, it's one of the reserves, especially the third base reserve.
Yeah, I mean, I know Jordan Westberg was second in the All-Star voting. I think that was more because the Orioles have a good team for the first time in God knows how long, so their fans are really like ready to go out there and vote for them. But I think if it comes down to Jordan Westberg or Rafael Devers to get on the reserves, it should be Devers in a landslide.
Yeah, and maybe Paredes too. Like, that's another guy that could kind of get in there as well. But yeah, I mean, here I am hyping the guy that's here. But I mean, the way he's performed recently, I think he's deserved of consideration.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Paredes too, because every team has to have a representative, so it might be that Devers gets left off just because Paredes needs to be the Rays' sole representative.
Yeah, that's fair. It's a fair point. And it's funny with the Sox, because I think Duran, Houck, Devers, Wong, and then Jansen. Like, those are the five contenders to make the team. I think Duran's pretty much in there at this point. I think Houck, even though his last start wasn't very good, like I think he's in there as well.
Yeah, I think he's solidified himself.
I think those two, like I feel the most confident about those two. But Kenley's kind of, you know, the way he's pitched recently, right? And then Devers, again, he's name brand recognition to me. Like, he stands out more than anybody.
Yeah, I think Kenley is another one where it's just name recognition. He's a Hall of Fame closer, so they're probably going to throw him in.
Yeah. No, we'll have to wait and see. And then, if you're interested, the National League, William Contreras, Bryce Harper, Marte at second, Alec Bohm at third, Trey Turner, Christian Yelich, Jerickson Profar, Fernando Tatis Jr., Shohei Ohtani. I like the American League better.
Yeah, I kind of got away from betting on the All-Star game just because it's meaningless, and it's pretty degenerate to be betting on a meaningless All-Star game, but I think if I were going to wager, it'd be on the American League.
Yeah, it's crazy that there was a time in which the All-Star game meant the league had home field advantage. And there was no season that was crazier than 2014. When this all happened, because do you remember 2014 was Derek Jeter's last All-Star game, and Adam Wainwright grooved a fastball in there, and Jeter hits a double, and he literally admits it after the game. Like, I did it. You know, it's like, listen, I'm a big fan. You know, like, I respect him. Grooves in a fastball. And then the National League loses. Now, the irony is the Giants ended up winning in Game 7 anyway. That was the famous Madison Bumgarner game. But it's just funny that that's what determined who had home field advantage.
It would have been funny if the Giants had lost that Game 7, and then the next year at the All-Star game, they're all ready to kill Adam Wainwright for costing them home field advantage there.
Yeah. I mean, there were some... Now, I do remember, like, growing up, I remember some of the All-Star games being pretty interesting. Like, Hank Blaylock, that's a name people my age, 30 years old, remember. He hit a go-ahead home run against Eric Gagne, of all people, in 2003. I remember Michael Young had a big hit. I think that was 2005 or 2006 that he hit, like, a go-ahead two-run triple against Trevor Hoffman. Like, there had been some fun moments. And then the one at Yankee Stadium was pretty fun. Went 15 innings. J.D. Drew, I'm pretty sure J.D. Drew was the All-Star Game MVP, because I know he took Edison Volquez deep in that game. Yeah, J.D. Drew. Let me make sure I got that right. J.D. Drew, let's see, 2008 All-Star Game MVP. It was J.D. Drew. There you go.
Edison Volquez is a great pull there. I haven't thought about him in ages.
Zach, is the more you get to work with me, the more useless baseball information that I have lodged in my memory from my childhood, it's there. But anyway, it'll be fun to watch that All-Star game, and I am excited to see which Red Sox end up getting announced. My only concern is being disappointed that it's going to be one or two, because I think they probably deserve three based on all we're talking about at this point. And I know you're sitting, maybe you're listening, you're on the road, and you say, okay, well, but this team's they're not even in the playoff picture yet. But I do think they have enough candidates, again, the ones we talked about, with Duran, Wong, Houck, Devers, Jansen, that I hope they at least get three. To me, that feels like the right amount, but we'll have to wait and see. In the meantime, Sox keep winning. Three straight W's, and they go for the sweep tomorrow on July 4th. We hope you have an awesome Independence Day. We're going to have Red Sox coverage for you all day long, starting at 12:10 with the MassMutual Red Sox pregame show, then first pitch at 1:10, and then Zach Coe and I have you for the afternoon on July 4th. I want to thank Zach. Great work behind the glass here at WEI. I'm Joe Weil. Final one, final time. Red Sox 7, Marlins 2. Brian Baio back on track. Thanks for listening to Red Sox Review here on WEI.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.